You're listening to Radical Nourishment. I'm Natasha Monnathau, narrative strategist with Food Culture Collective, and I'm joined by a crew of four incredible audio artists today.
I'm Alejandra Salazar.
I'm Nino McQuown.
I'm Danelle Wedderburn.
I'm Shefali Patel.
These are the voices of our Ears in the Field fellows. Each episode this season is a story of sovereignty and self-determination rooted in a food shed community in the U.S. All season long on Radical Nourishment, the fellows will be introducing you to the people working to reclaim our relationship to food, land, and to one another. What do you have for us today, Shefali?
What I have is my first ever audio story.
Woohoo! Yeah, go Shefali. Woo.
Congrats.
Thanks, y'all. It's inspired by the work I do in seed sovereignty, but what I think it's really about is the continuum of pivotal moments where humans plant themselves in the earth for a belief in something bigger than themselves.
Amazing. Here it is.
We should have talked about this.
You can say whatever you want.
I'm going to say something spicy. This may not be able to go in.
Love spicy.
Oh, yeah. So speaking of having all the answers, I have a really simple three-step plan to the liberation that we're seeking, and it is kill your boss, kill your landlord, and withhold your taxes. And I don't, like, I'm not being flippant about violence. I think that your boss is actively engaged in your slow death every day. Their job in this system is to extract as much labor and value from you with giving you as little as possible. And I think your landlord, like, if you don't abide, is more than happy to evict you with, which is a death sentence. That is like the necrophilic character of capitalism.
That is Derek McDonald. It's a bright, sunny Saturday morning in late spring. Derek and I are at the studios of KVRU, a low-power FM radio station located in South Seattle. We're here broadcasting our voices directly to the elements in the unceded lands of the many Coast Salish peoples and Duwamish River watershed, and anyone else who wants to listen to our thoughts around seed sovereignty. At least, that's what we had originally decided to discuss. And we did, but we also talked about so much more. This is a story about fugitives, rich inheritances, time travel, humans shape-shifting into seeds, the apocalypse, and how magic will save us all. It's a story about what it looks like to become free. Oh, yes. And as we just heard, there is a fair bit of murder involved, unfortunately. But before we jump down into the rabbit hole, let's meet Derek. I know them as a land steward, but Derek is also a design strategist at Hacker Architects. Derek advises the firm on how to engage with communities in a way that ensures diverse perspectives are represented authentically in the final designs they make.
And that's pretty groundbreaking work. I got involved with it by participating in a research project with Dr. Amada Perez, who examined how white supremacy is imagined, made, and maintained in the built environment, how the spaces that we make essentially make us. And I feel a lot of resonance in the different places that I put my energy.
Derek's other focus is Black Star Farmers, a place-based collective located in five growing gardens throughout Seattle. The collective's work at these sites center the reclamation of Black and Indigenous relationships with the land, the cultivation of food sovereignty for BIPOC communities, and difficult discussions about racial inequality. Derek oversees the care of Black Lives Memorial Garden, a small garden in Cal Anderson Park where our story begins.
This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Protesters in Seattle, Washington have taken over several city blocks after a protracted standoff with the police force there, shutting down a police precinct, declaring part of the city's Capitol Hill neighborhood an autonomous zone.
In the midst of ongoing Black Lives Matter protests, the Seattle Police Department vacated the East Precinct in Capitol Hill, leaving the areas to protesters who reclaimed it as CHAZ, or the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. CHAZ was later renamed CHOP, Capitol Hill Occupied Protest.
Seattle police using pepper spray, tear gas, flashbang grenades on demonstrators.
2 weeks after the murder of George Floyd and in the heart of the occupation protest, that Black Star Farmers and Black Lives Memorial Garden took root.
In June of 2020, during the George Floyd uprising, folks in the community came together and started planting, laying down cardboard at Cal Anderson for the Black Lives Memorial Garden, trucking in dirt and planting food, because we recognize that our connection to food and the earth is really important. And so that happened back in June of 2020. July 9th, I believe, 2 years ago now, Seattle Parks and Rec showed up at like 7 a.m. There was a 40-person work crew. There were about as many cops. And they shut the whole park down. They brought in tractors. They brought in all of the things that could have made a better garden so that they could destroy the garden. And I think that that event, yeah, there's a lot of interesting details around what resulted in that. That happened on a Monday morning. The Thursday prior, there was a white man walking through the garden, walking a dog, and he saw that we had hoses hooked up to a fire hydrant, that we had been in conversation with both Seattle Parks and utilities about whose fire hydrant it was and how we were using it and whether it was appropriate. Having spoken to utilities, they had no concerns about us using it. We were turning the water off whenever we weren't watering the garden. But this gentrifier was very clearly irritated, got verbally aggressive with a black trans woman who was working in the space alone about the water usage. And that happened about 4 p.m. on Thursday. Early Friday morning, someone had gathered all of our hoses into a pile and taken the burlap, some of the burlap that we had on site, and lit the burlap on fire, melting the hoses. There's no way for me to say that it was the person who was complaining about the water hours prior, but the coincidence is just interesting. And so the fire happened, the fire department responded promptly and put it out. And then because I think that the city had to mobilize city resources in order to manage that, they slated it for destruction the following Monday, which is interesting. Like, it demonstrates the city has the ability to move quickly on things like this and to move quickly when they want to.
Despite being set on fire and bulldozed, Black Lives Memorial Garden lives on in Cal Anderson Park. You can find Derek and their community planting seeds together in the garden during open hours on Thursdays from 3 to 6 p.m.
We've been talking a lot about it, and I think that the Black Lives Memorial Garden is one of the best examples Seattle has of a participatory design process, not because the city supports it, because they don't. They very much want to remove the garden from the space. They want to relocate us to Rainier Community Center here in Columbia City, which I think is poetic. They offered to provide a non-obstructive commemorative plaque in the garden, which I think means that they want something that they can like put in the ground so it's easy to mow over, that sort of says this was Black Lives Memorial Garden. Although we don't recognize the authority of the city as an arbiter for where we grow food and how we sustain ourselves, we definitely recognize their thoughts on the matter and that we are in community with these people. What is infuriating is that the city doesn't seem to trust communities in taking command of their food systems and foodways. They don't seem to appreciate the evolution of parks and gardens and what parks and gardens can be. I don't think that they recognize the legacies that Black Star Farmers is connected to and the legacies that they're connected to.
Black Star Farmers are more than just a group of farmers. The community gardens are more than just places to grow food. And food sovereignty is about more than the food we put in our mouths. It's only possible through the lessons, intentions, and gifts we pass on. Black Star Farmers sees themselves as an occupation protest connected to a legacy of occupation protests here in the United States.
We think about Daybreak Star.
The March 1970 occupation of Fort Lawton in Seattle's Magnolia neighborhood. Members of the United Indians of All Tribes staged a nonviolent takeover and occupation of the 1,100-acre military base to reclaim a land base for the urban Indians living in and around Seattle. Here is Bernie Whitebear, one of the protest organizers, explaining.
Senator, we'd like to be able to read it to you.
Well,
how long is it going to take?
It won't take too long, Senator.
Dear Senator Jackson, Kanatchatop Indian Council is submitting a proposal to obtain the United States Army land and buildings at Fort Lawton for use as a multi-service center and a cultural, vocational, and higher education center for all American Indian and Alaskan Natives. For over 3,000 Indian families in Greater Seattle, the vast majority are at or below a poverty level of $1,200 per year. The educational level is a seventh grade average. Basically, we propose to use the 16 immediately available buildings and the surrounding area to contain our existing services and provide adequate space to help Indians and Alaska Natives solve these problems. We believe the time has now arrived for the Indian to use his own initiative to take charge of his own destiny and at the same time help him make a contribution to greater society.
I can only emphasize very strongly the need to, you know, follow the law on that, because otherwise you wouldn't be eligible.
We're going
to
do it right now.
We're going to look around and try to...
over.
He wasn't even paying attention. Well, that's how they all are. Said, well, I'm too busy. I got things to do. I got to do this, you know. And you should have an alternative. Tell the cat that we got to know in a week, because Indian children are dying today. There's people starving to lean up against the fence tonight sleeping. What I'm saying is, and if it takes to occupy the place to show the man that we really need it now, then we're going to have to do it.
We think about Amare Garrett's occupation of the Coleman School.
On a cold November day in 1985, four activists broke into the old Coleman School, marked for demolition. Their demand to the city of Seattle was that the building be developed as an African-American museum, cultural hub, and educational facility for youth. They expected to stay for just a few days. However, the occupation continued for the next 8 years and is considered the longest act of civil disobedience in the nation's history.
We also see ourselves connected to other occupations, the occupation of Alcatraz in the late 60s and early 70s by the Indians of all tribes, the occupation of diners in North Carolina by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, to a legacy of occupation protests like the Underground Railroad. There's a history of people in the United States having to engage in fugitivity, the illegality of their personhood, in order to achieve liberation.
This right here. This is when it happened. I felt it. I felt the bottoms of my feet pushing more firmly into the ground, reaching down into the stability and strength of whatever lies beneath the floor, and my spine straightening and growing taller. I felt more rooted and more open and more ready. Listening to the stories of humans planting themselves into the earth to grow into something beyond and very different from their current states, I felt my body both small and vast. I looked down at my hands, made brown from my grandmother's and the sun. Inside this thin shell of skin lies the memories and wisdom of generations. Here, available now. They reach out through the tips of my fingers, small, searching tendrils looking for the light. I feel the biological impulse to do the work of feeding others so I may continue to live, to fill a world whenever it is made barren and starved for life and nourishment, to root together the soil of a future with others like myself. I am vibrating with cravings to bring back the multiplicity and generosity and beauty of what was always there, to grow the fruits that feed those who will carry me to the places I cannot even imagine while nestled here in the dark. It's what seeds do. It's what I am. Maybe one day I will be illegal, unwanted, other, undeserving. But it won't change the fact that I possess the technology to keep myself and others free. On those days, our bodies, the seeds, the gardens, and our work will become occupation protests through our mere existence, through our impulse and intentions to feed a more beautiful world.
I think about story and history a lot. There's the story about the formation of the United States, the textbook story is about taxation without representation and this idea of independence and free men, the abolition of aristocracy. And I feel like that's a cute story, what ended up happening is that colonizers enacted genocide on indigenous Americans while simultaneously enslaving and deporting indigenous Africans. And like, I think a lot about those two things. And I think about the use of that, the effect of that, and how those indigenous peoples were connected to a geography and had a power in that knowledge and that relationship, and how for colonizers to control those people, it was necessary to remove the relationship that indigenous Americans had to the land, or attempt to, because that wasn't complete, but also to sever the connection that indigenous Africans had to their land and to deport them from their homes in order to have power and control over them. So when I think about what we can learn from seeds, I think about how seeds were something that were carried in the Middle Passage, how those seeds helped to sustain those people through that experience, how those seeds ended up in America and were cultivated and continue to be cultivated.
A story of seeds as companions to fugitives and a resistance rooted in the simple understanding that we need food for the journey, to survive for the time when we can be free. It's a story about how resilience and love can travel through time. Seeds as ancestors broadcasting across the expanse of oceans and eternities to remind us that someone loved you enough to invest in your freedom and remember to save what's most important. The Black queer poet Dr. Alexis Pauline Gums describes fugitivity as a process of seeking and creating freedom within completely enslaving circumstances, past and present. The process of prioritizing collective freedom, a type of Harriet Tubman-ness, and the ways that we find each other and free each other again and again. I am a land steward. I am a seed keeper. But it's the land and the seeds that have been keeping me, showing me how to be more like them, to learn how to hold and grow life for others. Perhaps this is what it means to become a good ancestor. Perhaps this is why it's time to kill the boss, kill the landlord, and stop paying the tax.
When you are able to source your produce from a garden that you and all your homies tend, you're not going to a supermarket, which means that taxes aren't being extracted from your purchases. You're not like spending the gas going there. You're engaged in a sustainable practice. I think that these skills are going to be really important as we continue to experience the existential crisis of capitalism. I mean, like last year, we couldn't get baby formula because of the failure of our industrialized food systems.
As the world we are trying to run from is falling apart, these gardens are growing the infrastructure and cultural pathways for the future worlds we actually want. Derek hears the dreams of what lies beyond a post-apocalyptic reality.
Octavia Butler, Ursula K. Le Guin. I've been spending a lot of time learning about Duwamish myth age literature and other cultures' myth age literature. And I believe that there was a time where like magic existed in us and among us. And I think that that was fundamentally rooted in our connection to one another and our belief in one another. And I'm excited to return to a time where we're more fixated on the possibility of things and less concerned about the impossibility of things or the control of them. Nothing that any one of us can imagine is the full extent of what we're capable of. And more than that, I think that like we together are capable of things that we alone cannot imagine.
This is a story about a small garden, a continuum of resilience, and a precious blessing that we may all live happily ever after.
One of the things that really struck me about this piece, Shefali, is the way that it points to how often in the radical movements of the last couple of years. Food and community gardens have been like such a focus for how resistance is happening. And to me, that's felt like an acknowledgement of like, we're really trying to build new worlds. And if you're going to build new worlds, you have to think about how you're going to sustain yourself every day. And that means access to land. It means access to cooking facilities and housing. And I love about this story how it speaks to the ways that we're going to have to kind of create these complex systems from the ground up if we want things to be really different.
Thanks, Nino. I actually really appreciate that, because while I was producing the story, I was really thinking about how for many people, movements towards food sovereignty live in like these idyllic community garden or like local organic farm or like local farmer's market, like these settings that seem really, really peaceful and idyllic. And they are, but sovereignty lives in a space of complexity, like you mentioned. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of different types of emotions that come into this piece. I think there's things that are nice to hear and things that are not so great to hear, but all of it is part of the whole story. And so, yeah, thanks for lifting that up, Nino.
Radical Nourishment is a project from Food Culture Collective and Heal Food Alliance. At Food Culture Collective, we're transforming the story of food to help us collectively reorient to food as life source, compost legacies of harm, and grow a culture of care. Heal Food Alliance is a national multi-sector, multi-racial coalition building collective power to transform our food and farm systems. Radical Nourishment is produced by our Ears in the Field fellows, as well as Zach Rosen and me, Natasha Monnadau. It's edited by Zach Rosen. To learn more about today's story, visit the links in our show notes.